Good afternoon. I'm going to try and draw some broader conclusions based on the specific examples that were presented previously in this session. And I'm going to look at two particular aspects of the economic impact of free software: skills development and local economic growth. And a lot of this is based on data that we got from the FLOSS study. So this was a European Commission-funded project, the Free Libre Open Source Software Study. So we just created this acronym because it sounded nicer than FOSUD, which was the other alternative. And it was supported by the European Commission in 2001 to 2003. It's now the largest and most comprehensive survey of free software developers worldwide between 2002 and 2004. There were about 2,800 respondents to the original EU-funded survey, 1,500 respondents to the FLOSS US survey that was conducted by Stanford in collaboration with us, and a further 650 respondents to FLOSS Japan, FLOSS Asia earlier this year, which was conducted by Mitsubishi Research. The FLOSS project also had a survey of user organizations in Europe and and public sector and some other things, but most of what I'm going to talk about relates to the developer survey and some findings we had from that. The role of software or information communication technologies in society is something that I'd like to frame with a quote from Felipe González, who was Prime Minister of Spain for 15 years, who was speaking at, of all things, an open source conference in Malaga, which shows that there's quite a lot of political commitment to free software in Spain. And what he said, or at least what I got in the simultaneous translation, was that access is not enough. It's the ability to create and to add value that is important. And I'm going to look at these two aspects and show how free software is what is an important enabler to make this vision or this set of priorities for software's role in society to come true. So you have two things: the ability to create and the ability to add value. The ability to create is essentially the development of skills, and not user skills alone, but skills for production. One of our findings and my main argument here is that free software is a training environment that increases the earning capacity of community participants without any explicit investment in training. So it's a novel form of technology transfer. And as to the second part, the ability to add value, I argue that free software allows local entrepreneurs, such as those we just heard about in Extremadura, but also companies like Red Hat before they became as big as they are, allows local entrepreneurs to provide a greater share of the total value added than if they were using proprietary software. And this retains a greater share of profits and of the economic value within the local economy. The first part of this is free software develops local skills. And what I mean by skills are not the skills that we often talk about, which is the skills to use free software. How do you use Linux? That's not the skill I'm talking about. I'm talking about the sort of skills that you learn while participating in the free software community. Some examples are programming, of course, but also things which are not taught in most formal computer science courses, such as copyright law and licenses, a brief participation in any technical mailing list or non-technical mailing list in the free software community shows you that there's a lot of discussion on legal issues and licensing issues, which normally a programmer would never be exposed to. And teamwork and team management, this is also something that you learn informally when you're participating in free software projects. And I would argue that the team management, although it's often talked of as informal collaboration, but the team management required to have a functioning project with several hundred people who have never seen each other and who are not actually being forced to work as they would be in a proprietary software company. The team management that you need in free software is considerably more sophisticated than you have in proprietary software. If you're an employee in a proprietary software company, you do work in your team because that's your job. But in free software, you have to persuade people to work in your team, which is much more impressive a skill to learn. So these are some of the skills that I learned through participating in the free software community. And I argue that free software, therefore, encourages not only passive use, but active participation in the whole creative process. And it provides a very low barrier to entry for creativity. You don't have to be creative, but if you want to, you easily can. Now, developers see this. 78% of developers join the free software community to learn and develop new skills, and 70% continue for this reason. This was the most important reason given to us by developers for their participation in free software communities. A very large share of developers, 2/3 of developers, also give as a reason to participate in free software, sharing knowledge and skills. So learning skills and sharing is seen as one of the most defining characteristics of participating in free software communities. These skills do have economic value. They're not just informal things that people are learning for fun. 30% of developers say they participate in the free software community to improve job opportunities. 30% or more of developers derive income directly through their free software work. This doesn't mean they work for software companies or free software companies like Red Hat. It just means that they're working, doing free software-related work, and they're getting paid for it. This could include working on a website for a bank, for instance, or administering a free software solution for some company. A further 20% derive indirect income as a result of their free software work, including getting their job because of their participation in a free software project. If you work, or if you write a network driver for the Linux kernel, that's probably more impressive as a credential of your programming skills than a degree from some university. And this is something that both programmers themselves and employers realize. Employers appreciate these skills. So over 1/3 of organizations in our survey totally or somewhat agreed that employees can work on free software projects on employer time. And these are not software companies that say that, which is reasonable enough, since software companies would want employees to work on software projects belonging to the employer. And nor are these high-tech companies. So 16% of low IT intensity companies in the retail, automobile, tourism, construction, and other similar sectors totally agreed with this statement. For them, software is not a profit center. For them, software is a cost center. So if they find a way for their employees to reduce their costs on using software, and if their employees are able to develop their skills while doing so, they would definitely encourage that. However, these employers who are benefiting are not paying for these skills, because free software communities are like informal apprenticeships. But the apprentice and the students or the masters or teachers are contributing their own time for free. There is, of course, some cost being involved here, but the cost is not being paid for by society at large, by governments, by employers. The cost is being paid for only by the participants themselves, even though the benefit is not going only to the participants. Society at large, of course, benefits from having more skilled people around, and the people who employ these informally trained programmers and others also benefit, but they're not paying for it. Normally, formal training always involves explicit payment, whether it's the state that pays for university education, in Europe at least, or private sector employers who pay for private training courses. You have a situation then where everyone can benefit equally from this training. So, but only some people are paying for it. You have a lot of teachers. By teachers, I mean anyone who is skilled in the and sharing knowledge within the free software community. A lot of these people have actually got formally trained by their employers or by universities, and that has been paid for. But a lot of people are benefiting. Everybody can benefit from the skills that result through the informal training, which is not paid for. So you have a system which is a sort of subsidy or a technology transfer from those who pay for formal training to those who don't pay for formal training or can't pay for formal training. Within countries, this represents a technology transfer from big companies to small and medium enterprises, because you have big companies that might be paying for formal training or that might employ people who are formally trained. If these people are participating in free software communities along with others who can then go and work at small companies, who are working at small companies who can't afford to pay for training, you have a sort of technology transfer going on there. And globally, this represents a technology transfer from economies who can afford formal training to those who cannot. You even have sectoral benefits. Many poor countries, India is one example, have spent a lot of money on formal computer training during computer science courses. But they don't spend on formal computer training during other courses, for instance, biology. And an example I like to use here is a friend of mine who was studying at a well-known Indian, or well-known in India, biology institute in Bombay, where whenever they wanted to do computer-based simulations, they would all have to take their projects to the head of the department, who would program it in Fortran. Since all the computers in their labs ran GNU Linux, and they all had free software on them, out of frustration, they started using their free software systems more, and then they discovered the free software community out there, and they taught themselves Perl and discovered that there was a huge BioPerl community. With the result that not only were they able to, simply through the use or the availability of free software during the formal education, not only were they able to informally teach themselves computer skills, but this, of course, improved their biology skills, because they were now all able to do far more sophisticated science experiments, and they did not have the bottleneck of the head of department doing everything in Fortran. So you have a sectoral benefit here, where computer science students who are being formally trained are, in effect, subsidizing or transferring their learned technology to students from other subjects where formal computer training is not provided. Now the question is, but do we all want to program? And the simple answer is, of course, not, but I'd suggest something a little more complex than that, which is, how will we know unless we can try? And that depends on what you define as a programming language. HTML is a programming language, at least by many definitions, and the World Wide Web only took off because it was open. Now, many people create their own websites without ever looking at HTML code, because they just look at graphical web software. But when the World Wide Web took off, it took off because ordinary people with no more technical knowledge than ordinary users today, artists, graphic designers, poets, biologists, whatever, ordinary people were able to look at someone else's website, and they were able to select view source on their browser menu and look at the source code of the program, of the HTML program that was creating the output, which was the website. They were able to modify, they were free to modify this source code and create their own HTML programs, which then became their own websites. And they were able to freely distribute these websites of their own without paying a royalty or a license to whoever's website they had used for inspiration. So the fact that the technology was open and the programming language and the source code was always available and very easily available is what led to the explosion of the World Wide Web. Now, programming covers a very broad range of skills, from HTML to C or assembly language, if you will. But free software allows entry at any degree with little investment in time or effort. And, of course, people who were using Windows and Internet Explorer on Windows were also able to create websites, but they were creating websites using HTML, and HTML was the part of the system which was free. They were not writing C source code or modifying their Windows operating system, which was proprietary, but they were creating, copying, modifying, and redistributing websites in HTML, which is what was free. In a proprietary environment, if you want to be a programmer, you have to decide, I want to be a programmer. Then there is an investment barrier in terms of time and effort and money that is so high that you only make this decision if you are sure that at the end of a year you are going to be a professional C programmer and get a job doing programming. Otherwise, it's not worth your while because you have to spend a lot of time and effort, and the only way you can do it is by actually becoming, there's no point going through the whole process and being an occasional C programmer. So it's a risk and it's an entry barrier. With free software, you can start with tinkering. You don't have to overcome the whole barrier. You can decide how much you want to use these tools, and you can decide what level of programming you want to do. So with free software, when you learn development skills, you risk losing your time and effort. But since the barrier to entry is low, such as HTML, you can control the degree of your investment. You can paddle at the shallow end of the pool, or you can dive in deeper. Whereas with proprietary software, you are forced to dive in at the deep end of the pool or stay outside altogether. You can either be a passive user, or you have to be a highly active creator at the higher end of the creativity spectrum, as it were. And it's a very standard thing in economics or in real life that the lower the barrier to entry, the more people you will have who are using something. So the lower the barrier to entry there is for creativity, the more people you will have who will create, and the greater degree of participation you have. So anything that removes barriers to entry and allows people to create to a limited potential, if they want to create to a limited potential, and to a fuller potential if they want to do so, anything that does that is very, very strong for creativity and participation in active participation. And that's what free software does. The second point I want to look back on is the ability to add value. Now, if you look at how value is added to in the software industry, let's start with proprietary software. There are essentially three broad categories of adding value in a proprietary software environment. The first is to build over a platform. Well, say you have a proprietary software environment, Windows. You can build over this by writing software for Windows. So you're building on top of a proprietary software platform that exists. And whether the software that you write is free software or proprietary software, your value addition is in building over an existing proprietary platform. But this applies to any platform, and it's used as a non-modifiable base because it's a proprietary platform on which new services or software are built. And 100% of the value that you add is local. You keep it because you're building on top of it. But to credit, there is a report that some of you may be familiar with, which made a lot of news in Germany from the Münster Institute of Computational Economics, which says that 75% of the German IT industry is essentially dependent on Microsoft, and that every $1 increase in Microsoft spending would lead to $7.5 of revenue for the rest of the IT industry. But since most of this is based on this platform system, it's rather like saying that that the entire German economy is reliant or is based on Lufthansa, and that if you spend more money on Lufthansa, then the German economy will grow. Then you look at the second part of value adding with proprietary software, which is sales commissions. Now, this is, of course, rarely possible with free software, but it also represents fairly low value. The entire sale price can be retained locally, because that's the added value, is the sales commission, and all of that is what you keep locally. And no proprietor has to be paid a royalty or license for that on that sale price. But of course, the full sale price goes off to whoever owns the software, and you only get to keep a commission locally. And the final, which is probably the biggest category, is support, integration, and customization. A local value addition here is, I think I skipped a slide, yeah. Local value addition in proprietary software is limited because deep or high-value services require deep access to the software, which only the proprietor has, and I'll get into that in a minute. Now, with free software, you can build over a free software platform just as you could build over a proprietary software platform, and 100% of the added value is local. There's a slight difference, which is that you can actually modify the platform itself. But if you're just building over a platform, that doesn't really matter. Sales commissions, of course, are rarely possible, but as I said, the entire sales price can be retained locally, as no proprietor has to be paid a royalty or license. So if you do sell free software, you get to keep all the money. And support, integration, and customization is where the benefits of free software are highest, because local value addition can be extensive, since deep access is available. So 100% of such services can be provided locally, which means 100% of the value is retained locally. Now, I'd like to emphasize the importance of customization in the software in the IT industry. Custom or in-house software represents about 2/3 of total software produced in the US, and probably more elsewhere, because the US has a particularly large package software industry. If it's based on free software, then custom solutions greatly benefit the solutions provider, because the solutions provider captures 100% of the total value, and not just the value added locally. No royalties or licenses have to be paid. If you build a custom solution for a client using proprietary software, obviously you can only capture the value that you add over and above the proprietary software, and the proprietor of that software gets the license and royalties for that share. The other thing is that free software allows providers not to write everything from scratch, but to reuse code. And of course, custom solutions providers who are building custom solutions for their various clients reuse their own code. But if they're using free software, then they can reuse the code of thousands of or millions of other people, and not just their own code. So they have a much bigger base to build upon. Reusing and modifying allows the creation of much better end-user solutions for the same effort than writing from scratch. Now imagine if the factory Linux people had to create a billing and invoicing system for Extremadura and for the Extremadura region, and they were going to do it in a proprietary environment, then they would have to write everything from the beginning, which is why you'd end up with what you normally do in a lot of these customized solutions. If any of you has ever tried to work with the software used by travel agents, you'd see most customized software is rather bad when it comes to interfacing and is about 15 years behind end-user access in retail software. And the simple reason is that the software developers for the customized software have to do everything from ground up. So if you have to build everything from scratch, you will concentrate on the specific problem, which is managing land records, say, or managing your billing system for this particular company, and you can't invest in doing everything else, because then it would become too expensive. But if you're using other people's code, which you can with free software, then you get the user interface features from somewhere else, you get visualization features from somewhere else, you get numerical analysis features from somewhere else. All you have to do is encode the knowledge that is required for your specific client. So now that Factory Linux exists for Extremadura, it's possible to have someone create a version of this, for instance, which is suited for the government of Berlin or organizations in China, simply by focusing on the differences in taxation and the various invoicing systems that differ from Extremadura in Berlin or in China. You won't have to rewrite an entire system from scratch. What this means is that for the same amount of effort, and therefore the same or similar amount of money, a provider can provide much higher value to customers using free software than with a proprietary software solution. And this also means much better profit margins are retained by the local provider that does this. Deep support provides more local value, which is what I was saying earlier. Local companies providing support are limited in the integration and support services they can provide for proprietary software. Deep support, such as fixing software bugs, customizing it to user requirements, or integrating extensively with other software, requires access, deep access, to modifying the proprietary software itself. And of course, only the proprietor can modify proprietary software. Nobody else can. So the sort of support that a provider can, that a local company can provide for proprietary software is limited basically to hand-holding, to configuring, but not to fixing problems and not to integrating. Whereas free software allows deep access to everyone, limited only by their skills, which means that any provider can potentially provide deep support services and retain 100% of that value. So to summarize again, skills development, the ability to create, is something that free software enables, and it also enables the ability to add value and retain it locally. Now, when you want to build local information communication technology competencies, the choice is between being passive users of black box software or active participants. And being active requires being able to create locally and choose with the least barriers the level of creativity. So you don't have to be a programmer, but you should have the choice to be one if you want to. And finally, local value addition is much higher with free software relative to proprietary software, because there the vendor controls and provides the most value. More information is provided on the FLOSS project website, and there's also a paper that I did which, for those of you interested in developing country issues, looks at license fees for proprietary software compared to earnings average incomes. There's the European Union Open Source Observatory, which my organization is now going to be managing, which is a central point for all information on open source in Europe, especially in the public sector. Thank you.